is we're going to try to refute the Jesus myth hypothesis. So I gave you the little handouts there. I don't know if you got one yet. Did you get one of these yet?
I did not.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm going to just try to run through this real quick. Hopefully we'll get done before the class ends so that we can just get to the resurrection and the deity of Christ next week. And then the final week, the first week in December, we'll defend the inerrancy and inspiration, and then talk a little bit about paranormal apologetics. Okay, did Jesus really exist? Refuting the Jesus myth hypothesis. Some really good evangelical sources on this are J.P. Moreland in his Scaling a Secular City. He's got about 4 or 5 pages that really devastates the idea that Jesus was only a myth, and that was even before it made a comeback. So I don't know how he just figured out that it was going to make a comeback. Ronald Nash, in his The Gospel and the Greeks, is a real scholarly work that refutes it. Mike Lacona and Edwin Yamauchi, everybody here has heard of Lee Strobel's The Case for Christ, okay? One of the most popular books, probably the most popular apologetics book of our, the past 2 decades. Unfortunately, that really needed to be updated. That's the bad news. The good news is it was updated by Lee Strobel. I think it's The Case for the Real Jesus. Please buy that book, because all these recent attacks on the historical Jesus, they're there. So you can actually memorize The Case for Christ, and there's now a new twist on the objections to where it's kind of outdated. Well, Lee Strobel catches up by talking to people like Mike Lacona and Edmund Yamauchi. Paul Eddy and Gregory Boyd also wrote a book, The Jesus Legend, that they really do a scholarly job refuting this. You can go to J. Warner Wallace's website. Just look up J. Warner Wallace. He's the cold case detective guy. Really neat guy. He liked me because we both have mafia relatives. But on his website, he does an outstanding job refuting the Jesus myth hypothesis. Mary Jo Sharp, she wrote her master's thesis for Biola's Talbot School of Theology. And so if you look her up, you'll find a few articles. She basically wrote her thesis on it, so she'll write a lot of scholarly articles for scholarly journals that refute it. And then Mark Forman gives this outstanding, I'm going to give a summary of it, but this outstanding YouTube lecture that they uploaded on YouTube refuting it. And another guy who's a former student of Gary Habermas, and like Habermas says, I'm one of the top 6, but he's got 2 psychologists out of his former students that he puts in the top 6, so I don't recognize them. I only deal with the apologists. So it's Mike Lacona, Mark Forman, Alex McFarland, and me. And so both Mike Lacona and Mark Forman have dealt with this issue. Now, basically the Jesus myth hypothesis is the idea that Jesus, its stronger form is this: Jesus never really existed, okay? That the story of Jesus is just a fairy tale, and it's just based on pagan myths, okay? We're going to see that is laughable in scholarly circles. Unfortunately, most human beings could care less about what is considered credible in academic circles. And so internet atheists, this is the only game in town, is now denying that Jesus actually existed. So guess who we're going to turn to? We're going to turn to Bart Ehrman, public enemy number one, the guy who authored Misquoting Jesus, probably the leading New Testament scholar that argues against Christianity today. But he also recently wrote a book, Did Jesus Exist? And he subtitled it, The Historical Argument for Jesus of Nazareth. So even though Bart Ehrman is the leading anti-Christian New Testament scholar, and he argues against inerrancy and inspiration, doesn't believe the Bible is God's word, doesn't believe it's without error, he even argues against the reliability of the New Testament text, all that time that we spent dealing with that. Still, Bart Ehrman acknowledges that no serious historian or New Testament scholar should deny that Jesus of Nazareth existed in the first century A.D., and that he died by crucifixion. Okay? In Bart Ehrman's 2012 book, Did Jesus Exist?, he stated on page 220, and I've got the quote there for you, at a reputable university, of course, professors cannot teach simply anything. You know, like we say that you can't just teach science at a respected university and decide, okay, I'm going to teach a flat earth. Okay? There's certain things that are considered so far outside of scholarship, the consensus of scholarship, that you just wouldn't be respected there. At a reputable university, of course, professors cannot teach simply anything. They need to be academically responsible and reflect the views of scholarship. That is probably why there are no mythicists, those who say Jesus is only a myth, that is why there are no mythicists, at least to my knowledge, teaching religious studies at accredited universities or colleges in North America or Europe. Their views are not widely seen as academically respectable by members of the academy. Again, that's from page 220. So Bart Ehrman's saying, hey, you know, in fact, you can go on YouTube and watch Bart Ehrman chastising, you know, he's speaking at an atheist conference, and some guy raises his hand and says, what do you say to those people who believe, who are dumb enough to believe that Jesus actually existed? And Bart Ehrman looks at the guy and says, well, he did. And he says, look, and then he gets all these guys complaining to him. He says, look, if you want any semblance of credibility and any semblance of scholarship, just drop it. Jesus of Nazareth existed, and he died by crucifixion in 30 A.D. You know, when Reggie Finley, a guy that I was debated once and was interviewed by him when he interviewed me and Robert Price, Reggie Finley asked him, what do you do with all these idiots who say Jesus existed? He said, he did. And then Reggie Finley said, well, nobody wrote about him while he was still alive. And Bart Ehrman says, yeah, and that's the way it was for everybody in ancient times. Nobody wrote about you till after you died. And then he said, look, Paul even knew his brother. He's talking about Galatians and accepted, right? You see, the Jesus mythicists are now arguing that Paul never existed. And, you know, 99% of New Testament scholars are going to agree that Paul wrote at least seven of those letters. Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Philippians, Philemon, and 1 Thessalonians. They're going to give you that. So with Galatians, Paul knows James, the brother of Jesus. Okay? Robert Price used to argue, well, that just means he's like a brother in the Lord. Well, it's like, well, wasn't Peter? He's talking about, I met with Peter and James, the brother of the Lord. It doesn't make any, he's not talking about spiritual brother. He's talking about physical brother, the half-brothers of Jesus. And So now what Robert Price did is he started to argue that Paul never existed too. So Bart Ehrman, when he's in front of that crowd of atheists, says, look, if you guys want to have your little circle, and you want to say that Jesus never existed, and you just want to preach to the choir, that's fine. But if you want any credibility in the world of scholarship outside your little circle, I really recommend you drop this argument. Okay? So keep in mind, I'm going to Darth Vader to defend our view that Jesus existed. Okay? And so he then argues on 230 of Did Jesus Exist that there is no unambiguous, no clear evidence for pagan, dying, and rising gods before Christianity, and no evidence that such gods were worshipped in rural Palestine, the land of Israel. Okay? So he's basically saying, look, how can Christianity borrow from dying and rising gods, and J.P. Moreland points this out in his work as well, how can Christianity be borrowed from pagan, dying, and rising gods when we have no evidence that any of the pagan, dying, and rising gods, that those stories came before Christianity. So even if you have like a false god, stories about a false god, long centuries before Jesus, or even millennia before Jesus, the dying and rising aspects didn't come until after Christianity was spreading. So if borrowing occurred, it's the others who borrowed from Christianity. Bart Ehrman argues on page 171 to 172 of his work, Did Jesus Exist?, that even the enemies of Christianity admitted that Jesus was a real historical person. See, in Justin Martyr's Dialogue with Trypho, 150 AD, never does the Jewish lawyer Trypho argue that Jesus was only a myth. Okay? And then Bart Ehrman admits early oral traditions, what we call the creeds or hymns, early oral traditions about Jesus date back to the early 30s AD. They're creeds that are based on the existence, the real existence of a real human being who lived in the land of Israel in the first century AD. Bart Ehrman argues that there are too many sources. There are too many early sources written immediately after Jesus' life to deny his existence. He even acknowledges that the sermons in Acts chapters 1 through 12 are very early. They go back to the early 30s AD. Now, that not only acknowledges Jesus' existence, but those early sermons, the apostles are also saying they're witnesses of Jesus' resurrection. And Bart Ehrman doesn't want to deal with that, though. That's on page 172. Page 173, Bart Ehrman argues that Paul knew about the historical Jesus, and he met Peter, one of his apostles, and James, Jesus' half-brother. And Bart Ehrman also points out no Jew would have invented the idea of a crucified Messiah. Okay? And so basically, Bart Ehrman concludes there is far too much early evidence for Jesus' life and his death by crucifixion. Now keep in mind, Bart Ehrman is the leading anti-Christian scholar. Okay, but what we have here are Richard Carrier, Robert Price, and the Zeitgeist movie on the internet. And the Zeitgeist movie points to conspiracy theories about, you know, push towards global government, and so sometimes they actually, some of the stuff that they've got is actually accurate, but then they also try to find, you know, it comes from an atheist viewpoint, so they try to find a conspiracy behind every religion, and that includes Christianity, okay? If you want to find out about Robert Price's view, you can, I've got numerous lectures that deal with his work like I'm doing right now, so then I don't need to know why you would need to listen to that. But you can hear me dialoguing with him. I wouldn't call it a debate. because Reggie Finley kept interrupting and asking me his own questions, which prevented me from dealing with all the weird stuff that Robert Price was spinning. My sister Marie, though, listened to it live in New Jersey. It was on, like, internet radio, and she had quite a few non-believing friends over the house, and she said the more he talked, the more her friends laughed. They just couldn't, you know. And I got to make a few good points, but Reggie kept butting in, and I said, I would get ready to respond. He said, wait, we got to go to a break, but when we come back, I'll let you respond. Then we'd come back, and he asked me two or three questions. And after I answered his questions, and Reggie's questions were lame, he didn't even know the difference between the resurrection and the ascension, then he'd go right back to Robert Price. I'm there on the phone with, you know, three pages of things I wanted to say. So someday I would like to debate Robert Price, and almost debated Richard Carrier. I'm not too thrilled about that. He's brilliant, but his speculation is so wild and so out there. Like, he didn't believe Barabbas existed because Barabbas' name means son of the father. So obviously he wasn't a real guy. Dude, everybody's name meant something back then. So, I mean, our names mean something. We just forgot what they mean. But it'd be nice to debate Robert Price someday. But Robert Price argued, he's a nice guy too, by the way. But he argues the early church borrowed ideas from pagan myths. Jesus never existed, he was merely a myth. In response to this is a revival of the discredited Christ myth theory of the 19th century, the late 1800s. So Price wants us to ignore over 150 years of progress in critical studies. It was, by the way, it was the liberal scholars themselves who refuted the wild Jesus myth hypothesis. Price assumes without evidence that miracles are impossible. So he's going to deny the incarnation, God the Son becoming a man, the bodily resurrection. So his bias against miracles dictate his views about Jesus. And since the... basically, it's just if you believe miracles are impossible, you cannot accept the Jesus of the Bible. But Robert Price does what I would do. If I'm going to reject Jesus, forget about scholarship. If I want to reject Jesus and I don't want to worship Jesus and trust in Him for salvation, I'm just going to deny everything. I'm going to make Christians argue for every little thing, okay? The problem is all the historical evidence goes against that view. Robert Price, what he does is he only accepts as evidence things that are reported by eyewitnesses. Now, what he does, the constant response from Gary Habermas, William Lane Craig, Mike Lacona, what is their response when people say you have no eyewitnesses? Does anybody know what their response is?
Did the Holocaust happen?
Well, no, but that's the way I approach it. I get it, Price. But when he says you have no eyewitnesses of Jesus, how do they respond? You know how they respond? And this is not a bad response, but I think it's still a good response, but it's a weak good response. And because Habermas, Moreland, Craig, Lacona, Well, Moreland gets a little bit away from this, you know, but the other three guys, they only like using what New Testament critics will give you. They're not going to give you that anybody was an eyewitness except Paul. And so Paul wasn't an eyewitness of Jesus before the resurrection, only after it. So, but let me say this. If Paul was the only eyewitness, that's still enough to destroy these guys' cases. When I was supposed to debate Marcus Borg at Oregon State University, but he just never showed up for it. Marcus Borg acknowledges Paul wrote Galatians and 1 Corinthians. So based on that, I was going to argue that Paul's view was that Jesus bodily rose from the dead, and Paul claimed he saw him. And he's going to use N.T. Wright's work to show that the whole concept of resurrection was a bodily resurrection. whether you accepted it or did or rejected it. So Paul believed in the bodily resurrection of Jesus, and that Jesus appeared to him. Now he's going to leave it to the audience. So now you get to choose. Who's right? The Apostle Paul, who claimed he saw Jesus, the risen Christ, or, and then died for that claim, or Marcus Borer, who speculates 2,000 years after the fact? And so, I mean, you could go just to Paul alone, and that's a strong argument. But most New Testament scholars are not going to accept that John wrote the Gospel of John, that Matthew wrote Matthew, and then Luke and Mark, well, they'll usually give you that Mark was a colleague of Peter and wrote from the information that Peter gave, but it's still secondhand. Whatever the case, they're not going to give you that James was an eyewitness. So in other words, I would like to see us get a more robust dialogue with New Testament scholarship and argue that we have plenty of witnesses in the New Testament, rather than building my whole case on Paul, because so little is accepted by New Testament scholars. You can take what your opponent gives you and then argue your case, but I think that there's a lot more evidence than just what our opponents give us. But now we even have some evangelical New Testament scholars that are open to the possibility that maybe Paul didn't write those extra letters, and they call themselves evangelicals. So good thing is that Mike Lacona wants to dialogue with me, and we may get a couple programs out of that, try to get some clarity there. But in response to Price, the early church was rooted in Judaism. Gentile influence was minimal, if not non-existent. Now, you can find the church borrowing from the pagans, but you got to go to like 325 AD and after. When Constantine converts to Christianity, he knows he can't take away the peoples. These people are poor. You can't take away their pagan feast days. So let's take this pagan feast day and turn it into a celebration of Christ's birth. Let's take another pagan feast day, turn it into a celebration of Christ's resurrection. Okay? So there's some borrowing that goes on hundreds of years later, but to try to say borrowing went on and that caused the origin of Christianity, it just didn't happen.
Is that really what happened?
What's that?
Is that what happened? Is that why they say, like, Christmas isn't really Christ's birth, but
holiday? The people who complain about it, the people who complain about it, I think they have a good complaint if, Paul talking in Romans 14, the weaker brother puts one day above other days, the stronger brother lives every day for the Lord. So, I mean, if you require people like the Catholic Church that you have to go to Mass on Christmas, you have to go to Mass on Easter, you have to go to Mass on Sundays, if we required it and made it part of full salvation, that would be, at best, a weaker brother. At worst, you'd be a legalizer who's not even saved at all. But the idea that you can't take a pagan holiday and transform it into a Christian one by removing the pagan aspects and filling the void with Christian aspects, I don't see any problem with that. So I don't think anybody here worships the Christmas tree. If we worship the Christmas tree, we'd be paganizing our faith. My only complaint with Christmas is, why one day a year? Why not 365 days a year? So if we need one big day to remind us that God became a man, that's fine. Now I do have a problem with Halloween. Halloween was the pagan holiday that was left in its total pagan state. We haven't changed it one bit. Yeah, a lot of Christians take part in it. So I'm all for Christians doing a harvest fest type thing or some kind of Christian alternative to it. Get them in a safe environment where they're getting candy from other church members. Let them dress up as Bible characters, the good Bible characters, not Satan or his demons. You know, but anything, that's what we do at Crosspoint, and we open the gymnasium, but without fail, some unsaved family comes in, and there's always one little devil walking around the room. And I just love it, because it violates all the rules that we make for it. But we just love the little guy, you know? So we'll even give the little devil a hug.
Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in holidays.
Yeah, Jehovah's Witnesses are heavily legalistic. They won't salute the flag. And did they just recently change their view on blood transfusions?
For
a long time, they wouldn't even accept blood transfusions from pulling a verse out of context. Okay, now, Christian philosopher J.P. Moreland, he points out that the dying gods from the mystery religions who came back to life, they were never intended to be historical, and they were associated with the yearly vegetation cycle. So basically, when nature dies in the fall and the winter, and then it comes back to life in the spring. So they told stories about like dying and rising gods and that type of thing, but they were really not full-blown dying and rising gods. Anyway, but the similarities with Jesus are only apparent, they're not real. See, what happens here is sometimes, like in the debate with Doug Kruger, he started quoting this thing, and I knew if he got the quote out, it was going to devastate a lot of the Christians in the audience, because it sounds like, you know, there wasn't a first century AD a miracle worker that roamed the land of Palestine. He would raise the dead, give sight to the blind, the deaf would hear, this and that, blah, blah, blah. It sounds like he had 12 disciples, all this other blah, 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 and his name was Apollonius of Tyana. Well, the problem with the quote was, it was done by an anti-Christian, the quote, and it was done for the effect of destroying people's faith, but it's not even based in history. This Apollonius of Tyana was a failed faith healer of the first century AD who had a really bad reputation, and the Roman Empress, I think her name was Damis, hired Philostratus to rehabilitate his reputation long after he died like in the first century AD, but rehabilitate this guy and his cult in an attempt to compete with Christianity. So what he did was he started borrowing from Christianity, and so he kind of took Jesus' resume and whited out Jesus' name and put Apollonius of Tyana in there. And we know it's all bogus because Philostratus is saying that he was in Nineveh and Babylon. Well, those cities were uninhabited in the first century AD. So, but whatever the case, what they do there, the similarities are not real. They're just apparent. If you describe any pagan myth and you use Christian terminology like baptism, resurrection, born again, regeneration, substitute sacrifice, you can take any pagan myth, sacrificial meal, or you can take any pagan myth, as long as you describe it using Christian terminology, it sounds like it's got a lot of parallels with Christianity. Problem is, none of the pagans ever described their religion that way. And then these religions were polytheistic, believed in many gods, they were syncretistic, they would blend different religions. It was a non-moral context, whereas, you know, Judaism and Christianity, monotheistic, only one God, exclusivistic, the one true way of salvation through Jesus, and it definitely comes in a moral context. Moreland says you have no real resurrection before 100 AD other than Christianity. So all the real All the real, the bogus parallels are just superficial. They're the ones that predate Christianity. The only real parallels that sound a lot like Christianity, that dates after Christianity, was on the rise. Okay? Martin Hengel, one of the world's leading New Testament scholars, said first century Palestinian Jews rejected pagan beliefs and practices. If they borrowed from pagan beliefs, they wouldn't have been put to death. And neither would the early church. Okay? All they had to do is say Caesar is Lord. If they're going to blend other religions, they just say Caesar is Lord, you get a pass. But the Jews said Yahweh is Lord, the Christians said Jesus is Lord, and because of that they were put to death. The existence of synagogues throughout the first century Israel showed the ancient Jews could read. You know, Price and Carrier are acting like they're illiterate, and so they're just hearing pagan stories, and then they just turn Jesus, borrow from that to come up with Jesus. Jesus was a recent historical person. We have excellent historical evidence for his life and works. That's what we've covered in this course. Okay? 1 Corinthians 15, 3-8, that ancient creed from the early 30s AD, that Jesus died on the cross according to the scriptures, that he was buried, that he rose from the dead on the third day according to the scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas, that's Peter, then to the apostles. It talks about he appeared to over 500 people at one time. He appeared to James. He appeared to the apostles again. And then Paul says, as the one untimely born, he appeared to me also. Okay? Now, Greg Boyd and Paul Eddy, they wrote the Jesus legend. They also point out that when you deal with these supposed dying and rising gods, just a few examples here. Adonis, there's no death or resurrection until after Jesus. Then they change the story. Attis, there's a death, but there's no rebirth. He's not even a deity. Osiris is pretty, the Egyptian god, pretty interesting. Murdered and dismembered, chopped up into 14 pieces. His wife reassembles him but can't find one piece. I'm not going to mention the one piece in mixed company. And then he becomes a powerful god in the underworld. So Michael Cullinan says this is a zombification. It's not a resurrection, okay? And Tammuz, a recent find of Sumerian text shows no resurrection or rebirth. In other words, the resurrection and rebirth of Tammuz, that was added later on, after Christianity. It's kind of like when Christianity is wiping out, is defeating, competing with these other religions and defeating them, then to try to compete with Christianity, they start borrowing from Christianity, not the other way around. Baal, Isis, Dionysius, they also fail as dying and rising gods. We talked about Apollonius of Tyana, died 96 to 98 AD, written 100 years after the Gospels. More than likely, the author copied from Jesus. Apollonius of Tyana, it's not historically accurate, no resurrection appearances. Sabbatai Zevi was a failed messiah, possibly mentally ill, and there's no reports of seeing him after his death. He was a Jewish guy who ended up the Muslims forced him to convert to Islam. Then he tried to get other Jews to convert to Islam. They didn't. And then he died. And then one of his followers said he's going to rise again, but he never did. So, and this is way after, you know, it's after the founding of Islam. So it's way after Christianity. Robert Price does, he says, look, I'm going to try to prove to you Jesus never existed, he's just a myth. Well, then when he starts getting battered on that, he says, okay, well then maybe he existed, but he performed no miracles, and they turned him into a miracle worker shortly after his death. And that's where he brings up Apollonius of Tyana, Sabbatai Zevi, and then Simon Kimbangu, a Congo miracle worker, died in prison. The communists imprisoned him in 1951. Turns out he never claimed to be God, and he was a Christian preacher. At worst, he was a Benny Hinn, whose miracles weren't real miracles. But at best, if he really was a miracle worker, if God decided to send a Christian prophet with powerful miracle-working power to preach the gospel to people in Africa, I'm okay with that. But to say this is an example of how the Jesus story started just does not hold any water. The Christian philosopher Mark Forman says pretty much what the others are saying. But he says that the whole entire theory actually assumes that Jesus did not really exist in history, and this goes against all the contemporary scholarship. They arbitrarily combine all religions into one universal model and ignore the differences. There's also the fallacy that temporal priority means the earlier caused the latter. That's not the case. Even if you could find, even if you found similarities before Jesus, that wouldn't mean that the earlier ones caused the latter. He also talks about there's similarities in all religions. All religions are going to say there's a problem, and here's the way we can solve that problem and have eternal life. He points out, as we mentioned earlier, mythicists use Christian terminology to describe pagan beliefs, and that this creates a superficial resemblance where there really is no real resemblance. They make claims about Jesus not found in the Bible. Like, the Bible doesn't say that Jesus was actually born on December 25th. And when they talk about three kings, well, they borrowed it from this myth about three kings. It was like, well, we don't even know that they weren't kings. They were wise men. And we don't know how many there were. They gave three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But there could have been 50 of them. And so they're finding all these kinds of parallels, and some of the parallels aren't even things that are really taught in the Bible. And again, no evidence of pagan influence in first century Judaism. No evidence of dying and rising gods before Christianity's. If borrowing occurred, the pagan religions may have borrowed from Christianity as it began to grow. The sources that the mythicists use are not scholars in their field. So they're not historical scholars or religion scholars. They'll quote a guy on Egyptology when the guy's not even trained in Egyptology, okay? And they overemphasize similarities while ignoring differences. And then, since we already covered the historical evidence for Jesus, I'll just close with this. Forman points out an example of this faulty logic. With John F. Kennedy, there are many parallels between the Kennedy assassination and the Lincoln assassination. Therefore, you could say, based on the way these mythers think, you could, because, by the way, suppose there's a story that, okay, Kennedy was assassinated by a shot to the head. Lincoln assassinated by a shot to the head. The vice president of both of them's name was Johnson. So then Johnson became the president. Supposedly, Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln, and Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy. That, Forman said he couldn't find any real evidence for that. But that's, you know, an idea that's out there and that has been spread time and time again. The assassin got away at first, but then was later captured and later killed. So you have some real parallels, some fiction involved, some terms changed. But in the end, you get the real, you get that same phenomenon, okay? Well, guess what? Kennedy really was assassinated. It wasn't a myth. Lincoln really was assassinated. It wasn't a myth. So even if you found parallels between the Kennedy and the Lincoln assassination, it doesn't mean that automatically one borrowed from the other. And all the historical evidence that we've covered for the New Testament reliability, for the canon of scriptures, for the New Testament text, for the life of Jesus, shows that Jesus of Nazareth was really a first century AD person. Now let me say this though. Bart Ehrman says that Contemporary scholarship acknowledges that the evidence is so strong that Jesus of Nazareth lived in the first century AD and that he died by crucifixion. The evidence is real strong for that. What he's not telling you, though, is the evidence is just as strong that he also bodily rose from the dead. Now, why is that not accepted by at least a portion of contemporary scholarship? Although over 70% of New Testament scholars, even ones that are not Christians, believe Jesus rose from the dead in some way, shape, or form. But why is the Christ's death accepted and the resurrection not? Because of their bias against miracles. It's not the lack of historic. When I debated Dr. Mark Fulton from Australia, I asked him how much his debate was, does the historical evidence point to Jesus' resurrection? And I asked him, how much historical evidence would you need to see before you would believe that Jesus rose from the dead? And he laughed at me. He said, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in miracles. And I knew he was going to say that. So I said, so you're telling me no matter how much historical evidence there is that Jesus rose from the dead, you will never believe that he rose from the dead. And he said, yeah, right. And he's acting like he's making a good point. And it's like, dude, you don't get it. You're just admitting that you can have all the historical evidence in the world, I'll still never believe that Jesus rose from the dead. Then I asked him, why are you even taking this debate? You should debate, does God exist? You shouldn't even engage in a debate like this, because your mind's made up before you look at the evidence. All right, God bless you. Sorry we're a few minutes late here.